Welcome to Taylor Chords, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Condon. How you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
We are in hopes of talking to someone in Ferguson, Missouri, which is the center of the world at the moment, and certainly has the world's attention. You might remember we intended to talk today to Richard Williams, who is the father of Venus and Serena Williams, but he is doing his civic duty by attending in Ferguson, Missouri, and we are all glad of that. And we are just noticing the depth and breadth of this struggle. The New Yorker magazine today, if you go to their website, you'll find an article by a gentleman who is saying that there is a movement beginning with Ferguson. He said this is not a demonstration, this is a movement, which is really quite interesting. Of course, we will update you, too, as we talk about these matters. We are going to, and at the at 5:30, we're going to talk about international law, ha, 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 that should be our take on it. There are a number of people recommending that the cases such as that of Gaza and disputes involving Ukraine, etc., should go to the International Criminal Court. We are quite skeptical of that, as are many people around the world. African leaders are particularly unhappy with the International Criminal Court. So we're going to talk to a lawyer, Ms. Defen Dixon, who's a professor in Oregon State University, I believe, about that matter. So that'll be at 5:30. But now we are being joined by a very well-known radio voice broadcaster, Otis Richmond, and Otis is a veteran of the struggle against racism on this continent. And we need to ask him about both Richard Williams and about Ferguson, Missouri. Are you there, Otis?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Very good. We seem to be at the vortex of something here. You have written a review, of the book, the new book by Richard Williams, and of course it has to do with Richard Williams' own struggles against racism in his own life, and then the struggle to have his daughters have the opportunity to become the great athletes that they have become, and now today, unfortunately, Mr. Williams, who was going to be in our city, is instead, of course, joining people who are speaking out about Ferguson. So I'm going to give you a big issue to talk about. But first of all, why don't we tell people what is your impression of Richard Williams, and how important is this book?
Well, this book is called Black and White: The Way I See It, and every time I think of Richard Williams, I think about the song. That Black Uhuru has a song called Spongy Reggae, and they talk about a genuine character. And when I think about Richard Williams, I think about a genuine character, a person that is he's sort of a one-of-a-kind kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if there was one word that I would have to describe him, it would be driven. Because, you know, when you read his book, you can see how he was driven to, basically, he talked about having two daughters, and he didn't know anything about tennis, but, you know, when he had his daughters, he basically thought that he could make them into the best tennis players in the world, and he did that.
Now, that is amazing, isn't it? That he looked at those two daughters and thought, I can do this, or we can do it.
He had came out of Shreveport, Louisiana, mm-hmm. And Shreveport, Louisiana is it's a bastion of white supremacy, and he was born on February 16th, 1942, which would make him basically the same age as Chris Hani. In mm-hmm. The Chris Hani should have been the leader of South Africa, the trade unionist who was killed. Mm-hmm. And President Mandela became the president of the country, mm-hmm. But his life and Chris Hani's are very similar. in the sense that both of them grew up under apartheid, you know.
Very important point, yes.
Louisiana was an apartheid state. And Paul Mooney, the great comedian who, you know, wrote many of, I shouldn't say most, but a lot of Richard Pryor material, he was born in Shreveport, Louisiana, and he has a new book out, and this is a quote from him. It says, Shreveport, Louisiana, the deep, deep South, so deep the Confederates there kept right on fighting for weeks after the Civil War ends. Shreveport is where Jefferson Davis is running to when they catch his ass. One of the last diehard outposts of the Old South. It was in Shreveport, Louisiana that Sam Cooke was jailed for taking a check or trying to check into a white-only a Holiday Inn in Shreveport.
He's arrested for checking in.
Yeah. Also, Shreveport is the birthplace of Al Prentice Punchy Carter, who was the Deputy Minister of Defense for the Black Panther Party. It was the birthplace of Raymond Massey Hewitt, who was the Minister of Education of the entire Black Panther Party. Both of them come out of Los Angeles, California, and I knew both of them personally. And there's also the birthplace of Johnny Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
And
by the way, it's also the city that I associate most closely with the career of Leadbelly, who spent a lot of time in Shreveport.
Well, Leadbelly, I think Leadbelly was born near Shreveport and went back and forth to Texas Louisiana.
Yeah, and all these individuals you're naming, great artists and great figures in history, as you remind us, that it was apartheid. The law was the law. You couldn't go into restaurants, hotels. Everything was marked off.
Oh, I remember when my father passed away. I came. My father's buried in Arcadia, Louisiana. And when we were coming in, we passed the graveyard, and I asked my one of my relatives, "Is my father buried there?" He says, "No, that's the white folks' graveyard." Mm-hmm. And you know, my father and grandmother buried next to each other in on the little plot of land that my grandmother owned. But it was apartheid straight up, you know, because we were given lessons when we were, you know, when we would go from California, we went through Arizona, we went through New Mexico, we went through Texas. But when we got to Texas, you know, you were given lessons on what to say, what not to say. You had your own food you couldn't eat.
We all know the midnight special. If you ever go to Houston, you better walk right. The man will arrest you, and the boomer take you down.
And I know that other people that are my age, that many of them who were born in the North, like in the, I remember speaking with General Baker, and he was basically saying that General was born in Detroit, Michigan, but his father and mother were born in Georgia, and they would basically give you a lesson on what to say, what not to say. Before you went down south, because it was, you know, it was very similar to South Africa.
Yeah.
Very similar.
Yeah, and as you're saying this, of course, I know every listener is thinking Ferguson, 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 because this is and incidentally, Missouri is part of the Louisiana Purchase. These are people who were slaves and racially repressed in the former Louisiana Territory. Also, historically, it evolved a little differently in that part. But Richard Williams, can you account for him? He is on the cover of his book, Black and White, The Way I See It. He is a smiling man, obviously a very confident one. How does he account for his own motivation? Because isn't he rather similar to Malcolm X and I think a Jack Johnson, in that he defied the system and somehow survived it? How does he account for that?
Well, what happened to him was he lived in Shreveport until he was 18. It's very important to remember that Paul Mooney, Punchy Carter, and Johnny Cochran and Massey Hewitt left Shreveport when they were five, you know, two, three, four, five, something like that.
Yeah, like Jackie Robinson left Texas.
Richard Williams stayed there until he was 18. And the book outlines how, you know, he saw his best friends murdered. He talked about he had a friend by the name of Chili Bo who was killed by a white lady who hit him with a car and just kept on going. Mm-hmm. He was 8, and Richard Williams was 6. And a few years later, his second best friend, Little Man, was found hanging from a tree with both hands cut off. And he was suspected.
These are friends of people he knew personally.
Yeah, he was suspected of stealing a white man's pig. And, you know, this is, he says in his book that the death of Little Man helped him mature into an angry young man filled with rage. Mm-hmm. And he says he couldn't get, if he couldn't get the white man's respect, he'd dishonor him by stealing from him. Mm-hmm. And he had no sense of regret, guilt, or remorse. Mm-hmm. And at one point, if you read the book, he even infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan, and I won't give that away.
I hear that story, that is a mind-blowing story. Of course, people wearing suits, you know, can make mistakes about who they're associating with. they never seem to think about that one. Let's all put on masks. wait a minute. who are you again? Batman.
He was personally subjected to violence. His nose was broken.
Oh my!
3 times, his teeth were knocked out, and he was beaten with sticks.
Now, can you tell me quickly who did that to him?
These were KKK police. You know, KKK. They were, you know, because at that time, and I guess with the reputation I have, I guess I can say it. You know, KKK. And the police are still pretty similar, you know, in many parts of I wouldn't even say in the United States, but in around the world, because you have that same you have that same element in Europe right now. You know, you have the
Well, I understand, by the way, that there are big demonstrations today in London, England, in support of the black community of Ferguson. So this is a broad phenomenon. Growing out of white power, colonialism, the affirmative action of the imperialist class, let's put it that way. They practice affirmative action for themselves. This is, by the way, Norman Otis Richmond. Norman, I got to make sure we make note of the fact, where can people read your review? Available.
It's in the Caribbean Camera, and I also understand that it's in a magazine called Holla, which I haven't seen, but it's supposed to come out. It came out today. It may be on the newsstands, but it's.
But people can go to Caribbean Camera and find.
You can go to Caribbean Camera. You know, Google Caribbean Camera, and you can get the article. Or you can get it from your newsstand.
And where can people? By the way, you also can be heard. You have a program. Could you tell people how to reach you, find you too?
Well, every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., I'm on Regent Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Regent Radio, which is, you know, you can go to regentradio.com as formerly CKLN. Uh-huh. And every Sunday, I'm on Uhuru Radio, which is uhururadio.com. That's from 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and I also write a column in the Burning Spear newspaper. My column is called Diasporic Music, and my radio show is called Diasporic Music.
Thank you. Again, tell me, how important is this book? Is it a teaching lesson? Is this something everybody should have?
I think this is something that everyone should have, because you know, this guy is driven. Like I said, he's driven, and he's also a guy that he'll give you a lot of confidence. I mean, you know, just to see him stand up to the power structure, and the discipline. That's another. The discipline and the fact that he had a plan, mm-hmm. and he was not helter skelter. I mean, he talked about having a plan when you try to do something as opposed to just going out there and doing something. He is. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important for young people, especially young African people, to read this book. Although I think everyone should read it.
Yeah.
You know, in a part of his memoir, he has a how-to guide on raising children and
really?
his 10-point plan for success.
Good.
And you know, that should be of interest, like, to parents, youth, and educators. And mm-hmm. you know, he married. He grew up with three women. You know, with his mother and two sisters. And he married when he married his first wife. She had two children already. So he. You know, he had two or three daughters. I can't remember, mm-hmm. but I mean, he had what some folks would call a ready-made family, and mm-hmm. He's grown up around women, mm-hmm. and he talks about his mother. He absolutely worshipped his mother, Julian Metcalf Williams, and she died in 1985. And mm-hmm. he talked about his mother, who picked cotton and raised him, and four sisters. He had four sisters. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The book is black and white, the way I see it. Richard Williams with Bart Davis. One other question: was he in the military?
No.
Because you know, I can't think of him without thinking of Tiger Woods and his father. Again, a man who was driven. And also vision, and a very strong fellow, and working with his son in that case, and it's the daughters in the other case, but who really did extraordinary things and had the discipline to follow through, not just a big idea, but had the discipline to follow through.
Well, what happened with him was he left Shreveport when he was 18 and moved to Chicago, and basically says, you know,
happy choice.
He told his mother he was going to Chicago because of the racism in Louisiana and da 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 da. And he went to Chicago and says, you know, it was worse than Louisiana, because at least in Louisiana you could grow some food, and in Chicago, if you didn't have any money, it's like Richard Pryor say, if you don't have you have to have money or a pistol to get into food. If you're in Chicago, yeah, they do have a supermarket, but Richard Pryor made the statement that if you're in Africa, if you didn't have money, if you had money or a pistol, they didn't have food in the supermarkets, but in Shreveport, you could grow your food, but in mm-hmm. Chicago, it's so cold.
Yeah. Yeah. They stand guard over all the grass with guns.
Oh, yeah.
Because that isn't for everybody.
And he was always into hassles with the police. In Chicago, when he went to Chicago, he had confrontations with the police.
Well, that brings up something I often ask you. When you and I talk, I know that it's a recurring point. Martin Luther King said the most horrible racial experience he had was in the city of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
When he tried to lead a march in Chicago, he found out, you know, that white power stuff in the North was better organized and more lethal than what he had seen in the South.
Oh, there's graphic photographs of Dr. King leading the march in Chicago, and they actually throwing rocks at hitting him on upside his head, you know.
Yeah. I'm sure that Rahm Emanuel and his friends were in on that one, but I was a boy at the time, but I'm accusing. This is Norman Otis Richmond. We're talking about, of course, the book by Richard Williams, Black and White, The Way I See It. This is who is the father of Serena and Venus Williams, the greatest tennis players in the world of our time. But he today has been part of the growing worldwide voices against the conduct of the governor of Missouri and his police at Ferguson and against racism generally as practiced in the United States. Norman, what do you... I'm hearing the following reports. There was a First, you had the issue of they found the body and they left the body of this young man. For 3 or 4 hours lying in the street. And they did not tell anyone, actually until apparently last night, how many times he had been shot and in what way, although we don't know exactly yet what way, but he was shot 6 times.
Now I've heard... I've just read this at least 6 times, so...
Yes, you know. 4 times. I'm going to pass on what we're hearing, yeah, because, you know, here we are. This is a modern information age, and it's almost been a week, hasn't it? And this... And we only are just learning that how many times he was shot. We're in a situation where police and governors assume powers that they ought not to have. People have a right to know so that they can make decisions about crises such as this. I want to give you a thought here. First of all, they had, of course, a reaction of the population to his being shot 6 times, 4 times in the arms, twice in the head. The world found out that it's a black community with 53 police officers and 50 of them are white. They thought, well, let's solve this. They brought in a black commanding officer from the highway patrol.
Ron Johnson, yeah.
Yeah, and people liked it. People responded positively. They were going out and shaking his hand. He was patting people on the back. And he said, we're going to remove the sniper guys, and we're going to remove the tank part, and we're going to remove all his hardware and things. And people said, good, good, good. And then the governor says, oh, no, no, we're going to have a curfew. He pulled the rug right out from under the black officer. And what do you think? I mean, I get the impression this is an assertion of white power to remind everybody who the boss is.
Oh, it's like, yeah, we are in charge. You know, like it's a straight up.
He was probably thinking Governor Johnson.
Maybe Ian.
I hope that Johnson resigns and runs for office. And by the way, there are state senators from that area, black. And they're calling for all kinds of things, and the world is ignoring them. These are elected people from that area. Mm-hmm. And all we hear about is this white governor who doesn't like, he wants everybody to know he wants his friends, I assume in Western Missouri, where Jesse James is from. He wants them all to know he's the boss.
His name is Jay Nixon. Is he Democrat or Republican? Really, it doesn't matter, but... He's the governor, right?
He's, as you know, the Democrats founded the racial system in the South. They're the.
Oh, yeah.
It was their creation.
They're the Dixiecrats. They used to run
the United States. People like, you know, we talk about liberals. Adlai Stevenson always took his hat off when he met a Southerner. Oh, how do you do, sir?
That's kind of comical because, I mean, you are a student of American history. You know that. African people in America were Republicans, didn't become Democrats until...
That's right.
What are you, 30s, maybe 1930-something?
They didn't think about becoming Democrats until Lyndon Johnson signed that document, and because the Democrats had blocked it. The Civil Rights Act had been blocked by Democrats. Lyndon Johnson said, I realize I'm signing a death notice from my party in the American South, but I'm going to do it.
And it turned out he was right. They had the Democratic Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party with Fannie Lou Hamer. They were fighting. Fighting.
They couldn't get seated at the convention.
At the convention in that was in Mississippi, right? Yeah.
Yeah, one of the. By the way, thank goodness there's a statue of her in Mississippi. I understand. Of course, we have to have an armed guard to protect it, but there is one.
Yeah, Fannie Lou Hamer, a great leader.
Yeah, it really carried. And now, and by the way, this raises a point. We're talking about this is we're in now once again a crisis. Just before you came on the air, I mentioned that someone was quoting and talking about Ferguson, saying quoted in the New Yorker magazine today. They have a columnist. He says that James Baldwin used to say that. Black leaders said to the white leaders, hurry up. And then they had to say to the black people, wait. And Martin Luther King wrote a book titled, Why We Can't Wait.
Yeah.
I think that's where we are. I want to hear the words affirmative action. When I grew up, there were things, people called Irish cops. They call, in New York City, you always said an Irish cop. How did he become an Irish cop? Affirmative action.
Oh, yeah, but
his pals in City Hall made him a cop.
We should mention the fact that Al Sharpton is down there as the buffer, and he's let me go on record here. He's a shady character, and I mean he's a he's a fire department. You know, he's down there to you know try to. And I think he was booed, and I saw something on YouTube where the youth were calling him everything but a child of God, you know.
Everything but, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is the problem. We all recall that it this is quite similar to previous experiences. Incidentally, St. Louis and environs has had this, as we know, since there were slaves. And they had they used to call race riots and lynchings in East St. Louis in 1917 because black people were demanding jobs. And were not given them, and there was 30 or 40 people lynched in East St. Louis in 1917. So it's kind of an old experience. And then, you know, as you call them, the buffer folks have to come out. And in the case of Johnson, I really kind of feel for him, at least from what I see publicly, because he's standing up in church. He says, here I am wearing this uniform, but my heart is breaking for this family. You know, sooner or later, he's going to be pushed one direction or the other.
Because he says his son wears baggy pants, wears his head cocked to the side, and you know, he says his son, he's got to talk to his son about that whole situation, because the way he describes his son is basically I can't see anybody getting shot because they wear their hat cocked to the side or where their pants are sagging. I mean, that's another issue, but
that's a capital offense in some parts of the country.
I don't think anybody deserves to die for that, you know.
No, but that's exactly what it amounts to. We had, of course, the hood issue in the case of the young man in Florida.
Right.
And this is going to happen.
Trevon Martin?
Yeah, Trevon Martin. But, you know, in this situation, people who are recognizing it as an issue, we need to go back to the original language. When they said the cost of slavery and the cost of 100 years of repression following Reconstruction, the only answer was affirmative action. So people like the governor of Missouri have to be told, Mr. Johnson is going to become the police chief, and there's going to be 53 officers, and 50 of them are going to be black.
Exactly, right.
6 months from now, tomorrow.
But not now, but yesterday.
Yeah, and get on with correcting the problem. But they all want to say, oh, well, you know, we got to look at the deeper cultural. You don't have to look at anything. It's all right there in front of you, including all the lies about this young man, by the way. Look at the ritual they went through, which we're all so familiar with Rodney King. They start, he had a record. He once spoke back to his mama, or he said something in school, or, you know, which has nothing to do with the fact he's unarmed and shot to death with a minimum of six shots, two in the head.
You know that the NAACP is has led a delegation to Geneva to talk about the whole mm-hmm. question of the African American plight. And I know Dr. Gerald Horn was saying that the American states that the, you know, African, well, but the whole international situation should be used now. The NAACP, that's a whole other issue, but they kind of said our struggle back, you know, the African liberation struggle back, because as far as I know, it was India mm-hmm. was supporting, India always supported the Africans in America and Africans in South Africa. They had sent, you know, a lot of times their delegates or diplomats would come, and because they were so dark, they would get mm-hmm. messed over as well. Mm-hmm. And so they were really like on the forefront of supporting the liberation struggle. And the NAACP at that one time made a deal, basically say, well, we will drop this international stuff if you you know, we thank you, boss, for giving us, you know, the civil rights, so we'll stop talking about the international situation. So, you know, like when Robert Williams, when Chairman Mao Zedong made two statements in support of the Black Liberation Movement, the NAACP, Roy Wilkins, and then the Urban League and Whitney Young and those people, basically says, "Boss, you know, we don't want to have anything to do with those communists. We're just concerned about you know, the American Negroes."
And they got nothing for doing for that. It's been great talking to you, Norman. The book is Black and White, The Way I See It, Richard Williams. He's in Ferguson, not in Toronto, but we're really proud of him for doing that, and we're very glad we talked to you, Norman. We'll talk to you
again
soon.
All right, you can pick it up at different book lists and, you know, stay away from those other...
from the buffer people.
Keep bookstores alive and, you know... If you can help it, don't go to the Internet unless it's something that you can't get any other way, you know.
Right. Thank you very much, Norman.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Norman Otis Richmond, CIUT, Taylor Report, 89.5 FM. And we're going to be speaking shortly with Tiffen Dixon, who is a professor at Oregon State University and has written extensively on the International Criminal Court. You can write to us, maybe I've said it, but you can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm, where you can find us, Facebook.com/TheTaylorReport, and also taylor-report.com. Sounds like we're all over the map, but it doesn't feel like it, but it sounds like it. I want to thank, by the way, a good friend Tom Powers for helping for the preparation of this matter with Richard Williams' story, but also Ferguson, Missouri. This is something we're going to follow very, very closely for a while. I hope the New Yorker magazine piece, which you can find, and just go to New Yorker, will be widely read, because the issue is whether it's a movement or not. And I think the answer is going to be that it is a movement.